This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today. My name is Janet Mefford, and today for my friend Tony Perkins, taking a little bit of well-deserved time off the radio and keeping his seat warm, as it were. And I don't know if you were watching last night. I really actually laughed, because when you listen to the radio and you listen to Christian talk show hosts or you listen to conservative news talk hosts, oftentimes when the job requires you to listen to the other side, it's one of the worst times of the year for us, because we really don't want to sit through it any more than you probably do. We just don't want to listen to it anymore. And especially when you have Barack Obama in office for the last 8 years, you just don't want to hear any more progressive talk. And yet, here I was on the internet, and I was looking at all these different people making the same remark that I had in my head all night last night, which is, I didn't want to have to sit there and listen to it, but I did it, as if it was some sort of, you know, huge physical exercise. I didn't want to have to dig that ditch, but I did it. I dug in my hoe and I dug in my shovel and boom, 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 boom. All right, it's done. All right, I did it. So I did it. So I watched Hillary speak last night. I had to suffer through Chelsea first. I know that Chelsea Clinton is a very big part of the Clinton story and has been looked at with a great amount of sympathy by a lot of people because of what's gone on with her parents over many, many, many years. And she was very poised and got up, but not a speechmaker, not a speechmaker, nor was her mother. And I found it really interesting how there were continued attempts to bring up the mom card and the grandmother card. And then when you have the audacity, as it were, to say that was a lousy speech, then they start saying, you just don't like her because she's a woman, which is hard to say to another woman, because I certainly don't dislike women for being women. I generally view politicians through the lens of what they stand for or don't stand for. So it has nothing to do with being a woman, and we all know that. But I wondered to myself how in the world the Democrats would ever get by without playing the victim card. Because whenever you have a criticism, you're just being homophobic. You're just being sexist. You're just being racist. You're just throwing the Islamophobic. I got to remember that one, too. So all of you, I guess, who might have had a problem with Hillary's speech last night, either the tone of it, the content of it, the boringness of it. And let's face it, it was dull. It was just, went on and on and on and on and on. And on, and it was just plodding. Now, toward the end of the speech, she started to get a little bit more specific, but I don't know, I would fire that speechwriter, whoever it was. So let's get into it. Let's listen to a little bit of this. I'll make you listen to this if you didn't hear it last night, so you can see what I'm talking about. Let's begin here. Hillary began with what I call a sluggish, non-inspiring beginning. Here's cut one.
Now America is once again at a moment of reckoning. Powerful forces are threatening to pull us apart. Bonds of trust and respect are fraying. And just as with our founders, there are no guarantees. It truly is up to us. We have to decide whether we will all work together so we can all rise together.
Does anybody know what that means? Anybody at all? Anybody want to take a guess? Because there was nothing there. There was no there there. Oh, we have to rise together. That sounds great. So powerful forces are trying to tear us apart. Like what? I mean, the purpose of a speech like that is to wow people, to get up there, to make them glad that they put on this show for you for the last 4 days, and to inaugurate you with great amounts of applause and enthusiasm and excitement. And she gets up there like she's reading a phone book, for crying out loud. So then she goes on to misquote the national motto. Did you hear about this? Hillary Clinton misquotes the national motto, but wants to be president. Listen to cut two.
Our country's motto is E Pluribus Unum. Out of many, we are one. Will we stay true to that motto? Well, we heard Donald Trump's answer last week at his convention. He wants to divide us from the rest of the world and from each other. He's betting that the perils of today's world will blind us to its unlimited promise. He's taken the Republican Party a long way from morning in America to midnight in America.
Hilarious. Except that our national motto is not E Pluribus Unum. Our national motto is In God We Trust. It's In God We Trust. And all you have to do is look it up. And I listened to that and I said, that's not our national motto. Why is she saying that? And I cannot believe she or her speechwriter don't know that. I can't believe they don't know that. I'm sure that they do know that, in fact. So E Pluribus Unum is quoted, actually, as Red State points out, that In God We Trust was made the official national motto of our country by law in 1956. So it's been a long time. It's not really that hard to figure out. So I'm sure that was lost on a lot of people. The Democrats would perhaps prefer E Pluribus Unum. We should all be one, and we should all be one exactly like them. And nobody should have dissenting opinions, and nobody should have dissenting religious consciences if it gets in the way of gay rights and all the rest of it. We'll just be one, but it's like the Borg, and I guess we just all have to be absorbed into the great progressive one. And as long as we all do that, all is well. Although, did you think at all, like I did, about the fact that they seem really angry, considering that they've been in charge for the last 8 years? Going back to Chelsea's introduction of her mother as well, when she was talking about the greatness of her mother because she read her Goodnight Moon. Again, it was a really boring speech, really flat, lifeless, no great lines in it, no funny lines in it. And she said, my mother fought for health care. She fought for this. She fought for that. And I thought, but that's not the same thing as winning that. She lost on the health care debate. Hillary care went down in flames. It wasn't until Barack Obama came along that health care got done the way progressives wanted it done in the disastrous Obamacare. But she fought. Oh, she fought. Now, she had next to no accomplishments as a U.S. senator, which she was only able to get because she was married to the president of the United States, being the great feminist that she is. And then she didn't have any accomplishments to speak of that were any good anyway as the U.S. Secretary of State, although she did very, very well with that private email server and getting out of any criminal charges. So if you look at that as an accomplishment, perhaps that's something you could cite. Not that she would. Well, yet. Maybe in her next memoir, she'll do that. So let's listen to a little bit more of this. She did get into a little bit more policy when she talked about her plans, which, of course, were over the top. And there was an awful lot of pandering to the Bernie Sanders supporters because she needs their votes. In fact, Campus Reform was outside in Philadelphia interviewing some of the Bernie supporters, and a bunch of them all said, we're going to vote for Trump. So Hillary needs those people. She needs those people. So let's listen to cut three.
In my first 100 days, we will work with both parties to pass the biggest investment in new good-paying jobs since World War II. Jobs in manufacturing, clean energy, technology and innovation, small business and infrastructure. If we invest in infrastructure now, we'll not only create jobs today, but lay the foundation for the jobs of the future. And we will also transform the way we prepare our young people for those jobs. Bernie Sanders and I will work together to make college tuition free for the middle class and debt free for all.
Wait a minute. Bernie Sanders and you will work together? Shouldn't you be saying Tim Kaine and I will work together? Bernie's not on the ticket. Well, it's pandering. We're going to do free college and we're going to do free tuition and we're going to do free this and free that. And we're going to make this big, big investment in good paying jobs. Since when is it the job of the federal government to make big investments for good paying jobs? It's baloney. That's called take more money from the middle class. That's what that's all about. And I'm going to dive into that in more detail in a few minutes. How much Hillary wants to take from you. Because your medical bills aren't high enough under Obamacare and trying to get decent insurance for your family or some kind of good plan for your kids. You're not being, you know, charged too much with Obamacare. Have you noticed this? Of course people have noticed this. How much more you're having to pay to have the same care or less care than you had before Barack Obama came along. So it's going to be way more of the same with Hillary Clinton. Socialize, 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 socialize. Just keep redistributing that wealth. She's not, it drives you crazy. So let's go on and listen to her continuing this argument. Here's cut four.
We will also liberate millions of people who already have student debt. It's just not right that Donald Trump can ignore his debts and students and families can't refinance their debts. And something we don't say often enough, sure, college is crucial, but a four-year degree should not be the only path to a good job. We will help more people learn a skill or practice a trade and make a good living doing it.
All right, she's going to liberate millions from their student debt. I read an article not too long ago from some, it was on some left-leaning website, and some student was complaining, I don't understand. I took out all these loans and I didn't understand what I was signing. And so I signed away all of my money and I agreed to all these terms and I didn't understand what I was signing. And now I majored in, women, gender, alternative studies, and I can't get a job. And now they want me to pay it back and it's so expensive. I don't know how I'm ever going to do it. And this isn't fair. And that's why I love Bernie and give me free college. And this is unfair. I mean, where does human responsibility come into all of this? How in the world would you be able to get a good paying job if you're majoring in women's gender studies or what have you? What was your plan? What kind of job were you planning to get when you got out of college with that sort of a degree? And by the way, whose fault was it if you didn't adequately read the paperwork before signing it? That's not my fault. I don't owe you wonderful things on the end of it all because you acted irresponsibly. And, but again, it's a way to pander to people. It's a way to say, I'm going to give you more money. I'm going to give you this. I'm going to give you that. I'm going to give you that. And it seems very few of these people turn around and ask, but why are we in this situation in the first place? Why is it that we can't get good jobs? Why is it that we have such high corporate tax rates? Why is it that so many jobs are moving overseas? I know a good question. Just come down to one particular question. How come you leftists won't get behind the Keystone Pipeline? Because that would create thousands of jobs. And that's something the Republicans have been fighting for years. And no climate change enthusiast is going to go for the Keystone Pipeline. This is the connecting of the dots is so very important. It really is, not just on the content of the character of the candidate, which we know is very bad. And we've known that for years. That's one argument. She offers nothing. Nothing. She's done nothing as a U.S. senator. She's done nothing except bad things as the U.S. Secretary of State. She's left a pathway of destruction in the Middle East, a pathway of destruction in Benghazi, went out, lied about the Benghazi situation over and over and lied to the American people. And made the families of those four victims, Chris Stevens and the other heroes in Benghazi, irate because of lying to them. What else does she have but free college tuition? What's left? What can you say? Not to mention going after Bill's girlfriends all these years. That's another issue. But we're going to go to a break. 866-372-7234 on Washington Watch. I'm Janet Mefford. We're going to take your calls a little bit later on this hour, so stay tuned. We're going to come back right after this on American Family Radio.
What's at stake at this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's Word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. You'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Black lives, blue lives, all lives. The growing racial strife and the horrific assaults upon police officers have left our battered nation black and blue. Do black lives matter? Of course they do. That was the cry of Christian abolitionists in the past. Today, when one-third of black babies are aborted, black lives matter. When the majority of black children grow up without a father, black lives matter. Where are the protests against these very real injustices? Yet the underlying problem comes not from race, but from sin. That's the common denominator we all share on both sides of the issue. As it says in Titus 3, "For we were once foolish, hating one another." Unity won't be found in a group hug, but only when we recognize that red and yellow, black and white, we are sinners in need of a savior. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
We are not allowed to have a U-Haul that comes to heaven with us.
Anna Marie Travers has an AFA Foundation charitable gift annuity.
The Lord has given us things that we can acquire, but you know, everything will stay here, and I'm so thankful for the American Family Annuity Fund, where we can give some to something that we so highly value.
Through the AFA Foundation, a charitable gift annuity provides a monthly income as well as a legacy of support for the American Family Association.
I cannot recommend a better person than they have at AFA to help you with getting your annuity fund. It was so easy.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
All right, we are back on Washington Watch. My name is Janet Mefford. In today for Tony Perkins, glad you could tune in. Our number, 866-372-7234. That's 866-372-7234. And we'll take your calls later on this hour, so keep that number handy. We do want you to call in and give us your ideas and your thoughts and your reactions to the DNC speech that Hillary Clinton gave, or anything else that's on your mind. We were talking a little bit about Hillary Clinton and how boring the speech was. Well, I was talking about how boring her speech was. Maybe you thought it was the greatest thing in the whole world. I thought it was pretty boring and a big disappointment for somebody who's been waiting for 45 years to have the moment. At any rate, I got to play one more cut before I get into some other issues, because there are some other issues that are quite significant. This was, I think, the highlight and or low light of the speech at the very end of this cut, where she's talking first about small businesses and ends up discussing the woman card. Here's cut five.
We will give small businesses like my dad's a boost. Make it easier to get credit. Way too many dreams die in the parking lots of banks. In America, if you can dream it, you should be able to build it. And we will help you balance family and work. And you know what? If fighting for affordable childcare and paid family leave is playing the woman card, then deal me in.
Oh, it's just painful. Absolutely painful. You're going to help us balance work and family. How exactly are you going to do that? Are you going to promise a chicken in every pot next? What? It was just promise after promise. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. We're going to do this and this and this and this and this and this. And, you know, you really just kind of glossed over there, Mrs. Clinton, the last 25 years, your great accomplishments, all the chances that you had to do great things. And there was fighting, but there wasn't really succeeding. And working across the aisle. Sure, that's going to happen. Lots of working across the aisle. That's what Hillary's known for. It's just, if you know anything about the 90s or beyond, you know, what do you even say at this point that hasn't already been said umpteen times other than, wow, I can't believe we're here in American history. So I want to jump to something else before we have to go to other subjects. But on the issue of her money-wise, tax-wise, I should say, when she talked about the biggest investment that they're going to be making in good-paying jobs, That means hold on to your wallet, folks. That's what she's talking about. And Americans for Tax Reform have some details on her planned tax increases on you. And by the way, her planned net tax increase on the American people is at least $1 trillion with a T over 10 years. This is based on the figures from her own campaign, by the way. And she's the same woman who pledged not to raise taxes on any American who is making less than $250,000. Now I guess she says it's a goal. Goals are important, but pledges not so much. So here's some of the hard numbers. First, her income tax increases. $350 billion is what she is proposing as a tax hike in the form of a 28% cap on itemized deductions. She's planning a business tax increase of $275 billion, at least, through undefined business tax reform. She's planning a fairness tax increase of $400 billion. Now, according to her plan, she's called for this. Well, it actually could be up to $500 billion by, quote, you'll love this Orwellian speak, by restoring basic fairness to our tax code. Basic fairness. These proposals include a fair share surcharge, the taxing of carried interest capital gains as ordinary income, and a hike in the death tax. But there are even more Clinton tax hike proposals not included in the tally above, and they go into those. There's going to be a capital gains tax increase. She's proposed this to counter the tyranny of today's earnings report, and her plan calls for a Byzantine capital gains tax regime with 6 rates. There's a tax on stock trading as well. I won't go into all the details on that, and some other taxes as well, including an exit tax. And you say, what's an exit tax? Rather than reduce the extremely high, uncompetitive corporate tax rate, which I alluded to earlier, Hillary Clinton has proposed a series of measures aimed at inversions, including an exit tax on income earned overseas. Her campaign document describing this proposal says it will raise $80 billion in tax revenue, but claims some of the $80 billion will be plowed into tax relief, but they don't tell you how much that is. This proposal completely fails to address the underlying causes behind inversions, the 39% corporate tax rate in the United States, a 35% federal rate, plus an average state rate of 4%, and our worldwide system of taxation, which imposes tax on all American earnings worldwide. Now, before your eyes glaze over taxes, just remember this affects you. These things affect you. When we're working on progress, what they're really working on is progress toward taking more of your money and giving it to other people. And there's no end to the amount of money they will take from you if you continue to let them do it. Because there's no such thing as dialing back spending. They're not going to dial back spending unless it's the military. But they're not going to dial back spending on giving away more money and throwing the money. This is why we have a $20 trillion federal debt. I thought that the liberals cared about the federal debt once upon a time, but not so much right now. Now, in addition to this, I think it's also significant, and I'm not going to have a tremendous amount of time to talk about this, only a little bit of time to talk about this, but it bears discussing, to some extent, a good article over at the Center for Security Policy website on Hillary Clinton's support for the Muslim Brotherhood. Another thing you're not going to hear talked about at the DNC. A couple of quick items on that score. In 2010, Hillary Clinton, as they point out, personally overturned standing policy to approve the admission into the U.S. of one of the Muslim Brotherhood's top operatives, Tariq Ramadan. You can go back and read a New York Times article on that. I think I still have it in my file somewhere. She personally approved the policy of formally engaging with the Muslim Brotherhood. Let me back up a little bit. If you're not aware of the Muslim Brotherhood, and you know them because of what happened in Egypt, certainly, the Muslim Brotherhood has been a problem throughout the Barack Obama administration because they've been visiting the White House and you've had lots of articles about visits and operatives working within the federal government, Huma Abedin, her right-hand woman, and her well-established ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. Scariest of all, though, is Mrs. Clinton's commitment to criticizing or prohibiting defamation of Islam or religious speech through Resolution 1618 at the UN, and that's huge. That would affect us all. She's the one who said in Istanbul, we must bring back the old-fashioned tactics of peer pressure and shaming against people who say things that we don't support. This is Hillary Clinton. Something you won't hear on the DNC. All right, we're going to go to a break. We'll be back on Washington Watch. Janet Mefford with you. Back in a moment on American Family Radio.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
All likelihood, a little bit of a rough start to next week and a rough close this week as a result of a number of factors from an economic perspective. We've had a lot of bad earnings. We continue to see earnings of some of the large tech companies. Matter of fact, Microsoft announcing they are going to have a big layoff, even in the midst of some pretty good stock prices for Microsoft. But nonetheless, they're worried about the economy. Speaking of the economy, the big number today is GDP number. So we get GDP number out. Now, of course, very funny, all the economists polled expected a 2.5%. I read an article that said certainly we're going to see about a 2.5%, no doubt about it. You've heard me say for quite some time, there's no way we should have a 2.5% GDP growth. As a matter of fact, according to my numbers, it was impossible. And I hate to say this. This sounds horrible, self-serving. I haven't been wrong in about 3 years. I don't know what these economists, because frankly, folks, they're a lot smarter than I am. I think they believe if they say it, it'll happen. But we got to look at the underlying fundamentals and the economy. We got a GDP number, annual rate, 1.2%. Last look, 1.1%. Could it be that President Obama could finish his last year breaking his record, his wonderful record of 2% GDP growth for 7 consecutive years? Could it be below 2% this year? It certainly is on course for that. We've got 6 months to make up some ground. Not likely to happen.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
We are back on Washington Watch. Janet Mefford with you. 866-372-7234. That's toll free, 866-372-7234, and we'll be taking your calls in just a couple of minutes. So we've been talking a lot about the DNC and what went on. Another interesting story, and you might have heard about this, is apparently the Navy will be honoring Harvey Milk with a U.S. Navy ship. Did you hear about this? He's already got a postage stamp. From the BBC, the U.S. Navy set to name a ship after gay rights activist and politician Harvey Milk. And it's yet to be built. So, very interesting, isn't it? Continuing to push forward the progress on a number of fronts. Now, there was also a very, very important story that broke this week. Great news, in fact, when the Harris County, Texas District Attorney's Office dropped all charges against pro-life activist David Dalyden from the Center for Medical Progress, as well as fellow pro-lifer Sandra Merritt. Now, David, you'll remember, put together those great undercover Planned Parenthood videos that showed executives discussing the sale of baby body parts procured from abortions. It's an amazing story, and I'm really glad that David Dalyden and Sandra Merritt were able to finally get some justice on the front, and we're going to get some more now from Dalyden's attorney, Peter Breen, who is special counsel at the Thomas More Society. And Peter, it's great to have you here today.
Hey, thank you, Jay. Good to talk.
Thank you so much. Well, a great victory. I know a lot of pro-lifers really excited by this. Were you surprised?
Well, we were a little bit pleasantly surprised. You're always glad to be able to win without having to go to your hearing. You know, we were right there on the verge of the hearing. We had some very strong evidence that we were going to be presenting. We had about 4 or 5 different arguments that we had to quash these indictments, everything from prosecutorial misconduct to more mundane arguments about the fact the grand jury didn't have the authority to go into the investigation, to try to take the investigation for Planned Parenthood and redirect it to David and to Susan Merritt, his co-worker there. So we were glad that the prosecutors finally saw the light. I mean, they had done a lot of saber rattling. They had said we're gonna prosecute him, we're gonna get him, and finally, when they were faced with all that evidence we were going to be putting on against them, I think they took the better course of not having that dragged out to the public.
Yeah, well, it was very interesting because I saw in the statement from the Center for Medical Progress, Planned Parenthood tried to collude with public officials to manipulate the legal process to their own benefit, and they failed. I think that was the most outrageous part about it. Instead of going after Planned Parenthood, they went after the whistleblowers.
Absolutely. And we learned a lot about that process when it was a day or two after the indictments came down. the Planned Parenthood attorney had a press conference and was just gloating about how he had helped to bring the prosecution around, get it redirected from Planned Parenthood and right after David and Susan, which was ludicrous. That grand jury clearly did not do its job, and really the prosecutors are the ones that are responsible for directing the grand jury and making sure that those grand jurors stay on task and do what they're charged to do. Because as best we can tell, they really did not do much of an investigation at all.
Right. So I know there are still a lot of legal things in play, different lawsuits and so forth. But what happens from here? A lot of people are wondering, now can the Center for Medical Progress go forward, release more videos? Where do things stand?
Well, what we're glad for is now David and Susan are out from under a possible 20-year prison sentence. That's a great weight off their shoulders. We're still considering whether we can do any counter-suing in Texas based on these just absolutely meritless indictments. But we are now turning our focus back to some of the California litigation. The California Attorney General has been using some of the same legal theories as they did in Houston and been executed search warrants against David at his apartment and otherwise. So we're hoping that these dismissals will help send a message to the rest of the country, because Planned Parenthood had been beating us over the head with these indictments. And now that they're dismissed and so summarily, we're now hoping to kind of do the reverse and repair the damage that was done by Planned Parenthood trying to use these against us. Now we want to go back and use the dismissals against them.
Good. I think that's excellent. Well, at one point, the district attorney admitted, didn't she, that her office violated the law in the whole handling of the indictment? And then she just kind of dismissed it as minor?
Yes, that was what they were trying to do, was downplay the fact that grand jury evidence had been shared with the target of the grand jury, which you just don't do. You can't share grand jury evidence with anybody, any third party, much less the target themselves.
Yeah,
it was very irregular and something that we highlighted. And certainly, I don't think the prosecutor's office wanted to get into the details of that at hearing. And so, we were very glad that, you in law, you don't often get dismissed on the grounds you really want, but as long as you're dismissed, you're glad for it.
Right, exactly. What are your thoughts? I know we've had congressional hearings on Planned Parenthood, but as far as Planned Parenthood ultimately being held accountable for the horrors of selling baby body parts, what is your sense right now of ultimate justice against Planned Parenthood?
Well, and we've got to remember that comes in many forms. And some of the allegations in their lawsuit against David and CMP in California, they filed a federal racketeering lawsuit. Some of their allegations are that they have lost massive business. Folks are not going to Planned Parenthood. Their reputation in the community has been diminished greatly.
Yes. Yep.
Because of being tied to baby body parts. So the justice is already being meted out. We may not necessarily see it. We don't necessarily see Planned Parenthood executives in handcuffs being carted out. But you're seeing some other places, and congressional investigation really getting some great progress.
I'm so glad about that. We're running short on time here, but Peter Breen with the Thomas More Society. God bless you, Peter. It was great to get an update, and God bless you for what you're doing.
Thank you, Jared.
All right, you take care. We're going to come back on Washington Watch, 866-372-7234. We'll take your calls next.
It was a time when men rebuilt the ruins and held spears, shields, and bows. With one hand, they laid bricks. With the other, they held a weapon. Jerusalem had been destroyed by enemies that moved in after Judah was taken into captivity. Nehemiah said, "You see the distress we're in? Let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be a reproach." The people said, "Let us rise up and build," and set their hands to the good work. Our nation, after many years of decline, is in a state of moral destruction. The cry is going out, "Do you see the distress we're in? Rise up and build." To restore the moral foundations of America, an army of citizens must set their hands to a good work and be ready to fight.
The American Family Association, informing, equipping, and activating individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture. afa.net.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
A quick trip to Aunt Helen's unexpectedly became an extended stay, and you're without enough of your medication. It's good to know you have real-time access to a national network of board-certified doctors with just a phone call. MD Live is non-emergent medical care 24/7, fitting your schedule. No forms to fill out and no waiting room, because all you need is your non-narcotic medication. HCBenefits.com. That's HCBenefits.com.
God reached Michael Brown with faith in Christ when he was a 16-year-old drug-using rock and roller. With that faith, Dr. Michael Brown has devoted his life to spreading the gospel and sparking moral revolution.
The world continues to go crazy all around us. I'm here to be a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity.
Dr. Brown has debated Jewish rabbis, agnostic professors, and gay activists, and is widely considered to be the world's foremost messianic Jewish apologist. Dr. Michael Brown will be one of the speakers this year at the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th. Space is limited to 400 attendees, so make your plan soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 1, followed by option 2. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. And we hope to see you there.
We are back on Washington Watch. Janet Mefford in today for Tony Perkins. Glad you're here. Our number is 866-372-7234. And we've covered a number of things this hour, all of which are up for discussion. And we invite you to call to talk about any of these things. We've been discussing the DNC and Hillary's speech and Hillary's record. We've also discussed a little bit with Peter Breen just then about David DeLayden and the dropping of the charges against him and Sandra, who goes by Susan Merritt, in case you were confused about her actual name. There's so much to talk about and so many things that are going on. So get your phone, and 866-372-7234 is our number. We'll go right to your calls now. Let's go first to Tennessee, and we have Shirley on the line. Shirley, welcome to Washington Watch. How are you?
Well, wonderful. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Found Hillary's speech to be a sad type of funny, because she sounds like a child running for student government in school, you know. They stand up there and they'll say, if you vote for me, everybody gets free ice cream, free milk, free Twinkies. You can come to school for 1 hour and everybody gets an A. And you can be bad all day long because there'll be no rules, you know. It's sad. I listened to her, and she spoke about babies' rights. She spoke about human rights and women having the right to abort, but she didn't ever speak about babies' rights because she doesn't believe in them unless it's her grandkids, which are being born, but she wants yours aborted. And it's interesting, she spoke about Bernie getting together with him to get rid of student loans, and in that same piece that you just played, 3 seconds later, she said, everyone has the right to refinance. So is she going to get rid of them or refinance? People need to know that she's lying. And that ought to stand clear in people's ears so that they will not vote for her. And I want to encourage everybody, listen to what she's saying, because it's ridiculous. She contradicts herself 2 seconds after she says it. She's not your candidate. And just pray for America. And thank you so much for this opportunity.
Oh, Shirley, it was great to have you. Thank you so much for calling. I have neglected to mention one of the other funny lines that came up during the speech, and that was when she said to follow the money. I almost fell off the couch when I heard her say that. I said, like following the money at the Clinton Foundation. Kind of ironic. Thanks a lot for the call, Shirley. 866-372-7234. And let's go next to Missouri, and we have Raphael with us. Raphael, welcome to Washington Watch. What's on your mind?
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sure thing.
I just had 2 quick comments about the speech, really. The first one, it was just fascinating to me that Hillary Clinton would even bother to try to build this platform on fighting for the health and wellness of our children when she clearly is large advocate for not only abortion, but I feel like the DNC in its entirety was kind of an altar to infanticide altogether with everyone they included. And secondly, it just seemed crazy to me that she would also say she's going to fight to get money out of politics, which of all people, it feels like she's like the IRS saying, I'm going to fight to lower your taxes. Like, it makes no sense. I just don't know how people are even buying into the smokescreen that was that speech.
I agree. I think one of the takeaways from the DNC for me was that they've become a party now, at least in their stated objectives and goals and the way they speak, of just pure progress. As long as you're progressing in the direction they want you to progress, then those are the principles. Today we're going to be for this. Then we're going to be for this. I mean, Hillary Clinton, it wasn't too long ago when she was on the Senate floor and she was defending marriage as one man and one woman until she evolved. And now she has the opposite point of view. So on and on and on. It doesn't matter. The contradictions don't matter. And that was why I think you saw a lot more rhetoric from Chelsea Clinton and also from Hillary Clinton about being human and being a mother and being a grandmother and, you know, thinking people at home are connecting the dots and saying, but you're the biggest fighter for abortion. Your platform is all about repealing the Hyde Amendment. You're not even going to allow people to have conscience on the issue of paying for abortion. So it's all over the map. You're not supposed to connect the dots, though, Raphael. You're supposed to just, I guess, focus on the progress and the details will fall in line.
You got to drink the Kool-Aid with the rest of them. I get it. And she had to walk on thin ice so much because she contradicted herself so many times, she could hardly make a statement without somebody saying, wait a second, you said the opposite X, Y, and Z time ago.
Well, it was an interesting speech to behold, for sure. Thank you so much, Raphael, for calling. I appreciate it. All right, let's go next to Illinois. We've got Marty on the line wanting to talk about David Daleiden. Marty, great to have you here.
Yes, Janet. Thank you for taking my call. And I wanted to talk, too, about the few moments ago you were talking about the taping the video of the baby part sales.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I have a video in my possession that I taped off of Channel 9, our PBS station.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real, I mean, it gives a whole lot of information. And this was about 10 years ago on PBS. And I don't know why they would even bring those people up for charges. And I'm thankful they were dismissed, too. But I have the tape. If you would like me to send that to you, I would like to have your address. I'll send it to you.
Well, sure. You can give that off the air. That's interesting, Marty. If you're still there, what was it that you saw on PBS, just out of curiosity? What was on there?
The sale of baby parts.
Oh, wow.
I've got a video. It's about an hour long. And it's the sale of how much it tells you how much your heart sells for, a liver, a lungs, and all of that. And,
oh, my goodness.
It was on PBS, and it was shown about 10 years ago, I guess, just roughly guessing. And so if I can send it to you, I would be glad to. And also, I was listening to Michelle's speech the other night, or when she was speaking for Hillary, and she was talking about a year ago about how great America was, and she was kind of ashamed of America or something. Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
Yes. On the news, and mm-hmm. She was kind of putting America down, and then she was saying here the other night about how, you know, America is great already, greater.
Right.
Anyway, so if you would, somehow I could get that tape to you, I would be glad to.
Well, sure, Marty. Thank you so much for the offer. And I'll tell you what, we'll put you on hold and our great call screeners can take down the information and pass that along to Tony and make sure that gets around, because that is a really important piece of evidence as well. And, hey, you knew about this 10 years ago and let's get this around. So thanks a lot, Marty. I really appreciate the information and the offer. Very, very kind of you. All right, let's go back to the phones, by the way, if you want to try to slip in. It's 866-372-7234. Anything on your mind, we'll be happy to talk to you. Let us go next to Ohio, and we have Keith on the line. Keith, welcome to Washington Watch. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
When you guys were back talking about, you know, tuition and, you know, and all that, there's been very few people, in fact, I can only think of one, that actually raised the question of why is college so expensive?
Yeah.
And just real quick, 1980 was my first quarter at Ohio State, and it was for a full time 12 credits and above was $299. You know, and back then I was making $2 an hour, and I could work at a minimum wage job and pay for college. So I love the idea that they keep talking about, well, I've got all this debt. Well, why is math that much more expensive to teach because the costs have gone up, or is it just that the great liberal bastions of these colleges have discovered that, you know, supply and demand, government gives all the access to the loans,
yep,
and then they just jack up the tuition because, why, they can.
Right. Right. You're exactly right. And I go back to my college days and, oh, man, when I compare what my college charged at the time I went there compared to what they're charging now as I have my first daughter going off to college, I'm in shock over it. But that's part of the problem is you have these federal loans. You have so much money that the government is willing to give you. And because people can get it, they jack up the tuition. Right, exactly. People don't ask those questions about why college is so expensive in the first place. And they need to. There are a lot of good articles online if you Google around. And I think Forbes has a good piece. Heritage Foundation has a good piece. And you can find that information very easily. It's just a matter of taking the time to look into it. And it's certainly worth your time. I appreciate that, Keith, very much. And I'm with you all the way on that. College is just ridiculously expensive, and it shouldn't be. All right, let's go next to Missouri. Let's talk to Jim. Jim, hi. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. I hear your show from time to time, and I'm glad I caught your number. I would like to hear your comments, thoughts, et cetera, relative to the Libertarian Party and its split. It's going to split the Republican Party is what I think. And that's going to guarantee Hillary's election.
I don't think, though, that we are in the same situation we were with Ross Perot. I don't, from the last numbers that I've seen on the support level for Gary Johnson, it's not high enough to make a significant enough draw away. Now, but I mean, there's always that risk. Absolutely. But I don't think it's, do you? I mean, do you really think that it would be as much of a pull away as Ross Perot was from George Bush?
Well, we're not to the point where we're going to vote yet.
True.
I mean, I'm afraid that it will.
It might.
It's a close election, you know, every vote counts. Every vote counts anyway. But
yeah. Right. But you know, Gary Johnson, it depends, because I think Gary Johnson has to get up to a certain level of support to even qualify to be in the presidential debates. So that would make a big difference. If Gary Johnson is not a presence on stage during the debates, that would make a big difference as well. Because when Perot was able to be up there and give his ideas and all the rest, they had to give him equal time. That changed. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. But at this stage, it doesn't seem that they have enough traction quite yet to make a big splash. But with this election, who knows? Everything and anything is possible. But I thank you very much, Jim, for the call. It might be a factor. We'll see. All right, let's go to Louisiana next. We've got Jonathan on the line. More Hillary talk. Jonathan, it's great to have you here.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's great to be on. I love listening to your program. I wanted to make a comment about what Hillary said about building anything you can dream, because I think that's an overlooked statement that she made that really goes back to the whole policy that Bill Clinton had, which affected Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which caused eventually the credit crunch. You know, I think that's still something that's in their mentality. They think they can force banks to give out loans to whoever or whatever they want to. And, you know, I mean, where does that stop? You know, you're going to walk up to the bank and be like, yeah, I want to build a giant life-size model of myself to stick out in the front yard. You know what I mean? You know, come on. The banks are there. They're at the marketplace perspective. They're using common sense as much as they can. And, you know, they're not about common sense in that party. That much is clear. So
right.
I just wanted to comment on that. I think it's been overlooked.
Well, it is a good comment. And when you look at how things have changed since 2008 and the Dodd-Frank situation and the banks and easy money and then harder to get money and not to mention everything I was talking about earlier with the tax increases proposed by the Clinton campaign, that will have a huge effect on the middle class. Then you have to ask yourself, if all of these taxes end up being imposed, where's the money going to come from for me to invest in my small business, to be able to grow my business and to be able to be successful? Well, then you go back to her promise about, you know, investing in America. It's all nebulous, and it's nebulous by design, because if you begin to get too detailed, people start asking uncomfortable questions, which we should. That's part of the whole process of trying to choose the next president, is asking tough questions of all the candidates to know exactly what you're getting into when you go into that voting booth. Great point, Jonathan. I appreciate the call. I think we can squeeze in one more caller. Let's go back to Illinois and talk with Terry. Hi, Terry. How are you?
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing great.
My question is, the Democrats, which I'm not one of, they have pocket votes. I mean, because, you know, they don't have no moralities or anything with their trying to win votes, so they got the sexual immoral people voting for them, and they've got the people that's okay with being self-centered and putting the baby to death rather than trying to raise one themselves. And, you know, and they got the votes of people that spread the family, the illegal aliens, they're here illegally, and so, you know, they're saying we're behind them being American. So they've got those in their pocket, those votes. Why aren't we as Republicans going after the black folks by putting the truth out there on the waves, on airwaves with commercials? Tell us, Abraham Lincoln was a Republican. He freed the slaves. Why are we telling them that you know, one of the founders of the Democrat Party was a member of the KKK? That might make a mistake. Who are we getting in bed with my votes for them?
Well, right. Exactly. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the new Dinesh D'Souza movie, but that's something that he gets into in that film. And it's very relevant. If you go back in history and you begin to look at some of the things that the parties actually did and said, you begin to see a different picture than often the media will give you or certain parties will say to you, particularly those on that side. And it does matter. It does matter. All of these things that we are, you know, when you look at the conventions are a big rally, and both of them are big rallies. It's to get the troops together, get them excited, get people to back the nominee, maybe have a couple light moments and show some heartwarming videos and hug your family and throw balloons and confetti around. And that's what it's supposed to do to kind of get everybody together. This has been a weird season. This has been a strange election. You've had so much discourse. You've had so much division inside each party. And, you know, who knows what's going to come of it. But I think that more than ever, American citizens have to know what they're getting into, and they have to know what these candidates really think and say. And thank the Lord for the internet. That's all I can say. Terry, thank you so much for the call. And I really mean that. I really mean that. When I say thank the Lord for the internet, nothing really dies on the internet. You can't hide it. You can go back and you can say, now, what did that candidate really say back in 1996? What did that candidate really say back when he was a businessman on this issue? That's not what I'm hearing now. Do your due diligence. I think it's part of your duty as a Christian to know what you're doing and to think clearly and to think biblically. That's going to do it for me, Janet Mefford, in for Tony Perkins today. It's been a blast being with you. Appreciate all of your calls. God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us on Washington Watch. Take care. We'll see you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.